Welcome to Witness from the BBC World Service, where history is told by those who were there. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
Hi, and thanks for downloading Witness History from the BBC World Service, first-hand accounts of the moments that shaped our world. I'm Lucy Burns, and today we're going back to 1999 and the opening of a prison in Uzbekistan called Jazlik, which would become infamous for torture and human rights abuses, including reports of prisoners being boiled alive. Some listeners may find parts of this report distressing. This is Mohammed Bekjanov. He's a journalist, and he spent nearly 18 years in prison in Uzbekistan.
When I was in the prison in central Uzbekistan, the guards used to say, "The worst ones amongst you will be taken to Jazlik. It's a place of no return."
Acacia Shields is an independent human rights advisor. She was working for Human Rights Watch in Uzbekistan at the time.
We were hearing a lot about particularly harsh treatment in Jazlik. And you have to understand, this is a prison in the former Soviet Union where prisons are already notorious. And then it's in Uzbekistan, which has some of the worst prison conditions. And Jazlik was said to be the worst of the worst.
Jazlik was built in the Central Asian desert in western Uzbekistan.
This is a place as remote as it comes. The desert landscape is barren. It is many miles from any city, from any paved road. To be sent to Jazlik was to be banished to a wasteland.
Until 1991, Uzbekistan had been part of the Soviet Union. When that collapsed, Mohammed Bekjanov got involved with a new political party called ERK, or Freedom. He became editor-in-chief of its newspaper.
Our main aim was to revive the nation, to wake people up.
ERK was led by Mohammed Bekjanov's brother, Mohammed Saleh, who ran for president in November 1991. He was the only opposition candidate to run against the sitting president, Islam Karimov, who'd also been the country's last communist leader and was keen to hold on to power.
As soon as that happened, the surveillance started. My brother was being pressured by Karimov's people to withdraw his candidacy. But because he didn't, they started persecuting us.
Islam Karimov won that election and became an increasingly authoritarian leader. ERK, both the political party and the newspaper, were banned, and Mohammed Bekjanov and his brother Mohammed Saleh both left the country. Mohammed Bekjanov settled in Ukraine, where he continued to produce the newspaper and smuggle it into Uzbekistan.
In 1999, there were bombings in the capital, Tashkent. As soon as that happened, my brother called me and said, "I bet they will frame us, so you must leave Ukraine immediately." But I was not doing any publishing at the time. I was just trading in the local market. So I said, "We won't leave. We're innocent. They won't touch us here."
What happened was the government used those bombings as a pretext to round up initially dozens, hundreds, and eventually in the course of its campaign, thousands of people on charges of being so-called enemies of the state.
Mohammed's flat in Kiev was raided by Ukrainian special forces, and he was extradited back to Uzbekistan, accused of organizing the terror attack.
The interrogation lasted about a week. They beat me so much I couldn't walk. One day they took me into another room, and I saw my colleague Yusuf sitting there. He was banging his head on the wall, like tuk, 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 and they said, "Look what we've done to him. He lost his mind. And if you don't confess, in 2 or 3 days, you will be in the same state."
Mohammed was tried in August 1999 and sentenced to 15 years on 6 different charges, including involvement in the bombings and trying to overthrow the government. He was taken first to a detention centre in Tashkent, then to do forced labour in a prison camp in central Uzbekistan, and then he was taken to Jazlik.
As soon as I got out of the police car, they started beating me with batons. They asked me to name the charges I was charged with, so I did. And then he said, off you go, towards what we called then a human corridor, which was about 100 meters of soldiers and security guards standing on two sides with batons. So you would have to go through it, and you would be beaten constantly by all of them. They beat me on the leg that had been broken when I was in prison in Tashkent, and I fell, and then I started dragging myself. At the end of the corridor, there were some steps, and I started crawling up on all fours. When I got to the second floor, there was a table with two people sitting at it, and they said, "We're doctors. Have you got any complaints?" But I said, "No, no complaints." And they said, "Fine, then take off all of your clothes." And then they made us run naked along another corridor, and they beat us all the way until we got into the cells.
Human rights observer Acacia Shields attempted to visit Jazlik, but was turned back. She says that the regime in the prison wasn't just designed to intimidate the inmates, but also people outside.
It was used by the government almost as another weapon in its war against political and religious dissidents. It was designed to terrorize, and it worked on people that way.
It was total horror, this place. Every day we would be taken out three or four times for interrogation, and during that interrogation, we would have constant beatings. There were 16 people in my cell. Everyone got ill with some kind of skin problem, scratching all the time. But what was worse was that everyone got diarrhea, so the stench in the cell was unbearable.
Reports emerged from Jazlik of horrifying torture, violence and neglect. And perhaps most shockingly, even of prisoners being boiled alive.
The man who was boiled alive was named Muzaffar Avasov, and it struck us all as something particularly medieval, barbaric. But at the same time, Muzaffar's story was very ordinary in the context of that government campaign against its so-called enemies.
Mohammed Bekjanov was transferred to a different prison after just a few months in Jazlik. In 2012, he was due for release, but his sentence was extended by another 5 years at the last minute.
I lost a lot of things. I lost my health completely. I can't hear well. I still have the scars on the leg that was broken in all the beatings. I lost the ability to speak properly. In fact, the reason why I speak slowly now is that once when I was kept for 6 months in isolation, I actually forgot how to speak.
President Islam Karimov died in 2016. Mohammed Bekjanov was finally released the following year after nearly 18 years in prison.
They told me I was leaving. I got into a panic, and it was really more panic than excitement. And I said, I need to collect my things. But they said, don't worry, people will bring them for you. When I came out of the gate, my two brothers were standing there with clothes for me, and I still just could not believe this was happening. My brother Muhammad Saleh called me from Turkey, but all we could say was hello. We couldn't even talk because I think he started crying.
In the summer of this year, new president Shavkat Mirziyoyev announced that Jazlik would finally close.
After so many years of criticism of the Uzbekistan government, the closure of Jazlik comes as such a breath of fresh air, and it's been attributed to the new government's need or desire to be seen by other countries as progressive, as opening up. And I hope that's the case.
Mohammed Bekjanov now lives with his family in the US. He's skeptical about the significance of the closure of Jazlik.
All those prisons I spent time in were exactly the same for me. They may have got rid of Jazlik as a place, but the torture methods that were used there are just being carried out in other prisons. So what's the difference?
Mohammed Bekjanov and Acacia Shields were speaking to me, Lucy Burns, with production by Ibrat Sappho. You've been listening to Witness History from the BBC World Service.